Welcome to Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius, your source for horror, sci-fi, suspense, and all things violent.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. It is way later than I normally record this. Yesterday was a rough day. I did not do jiu-jitsu in the morning. Lots of times I take off on Thursdays. I was really hoping to go Thursday night, but I had missed half of it, only gotten a little bit. But yeah, the whole day just kind of sucked. I was angry, frustrated, overwhelmed. I tried relying on my cats to get me in a better mood. Didn't work. But then I went and fucking trained this morning, got crushed by both of my coaches, Coach Art and Coach West, two of my three coaches. They're both black belts, both incredible. And it just felt awesome. After I did that, man, everything's back to normal. I feel cool. I'm no longer stressed. I still have a lot of stuff to do. Got to do this podcast. Got to do the newsletter. Both things I want to do. Normally, like my open rates and listening rates are way higher if I have this shit done Friday morning early. Last week, I put it out late and I paid the price. Like just a lot less people opening up the emails. That kind of sucks. But right now, I don't know. This is what I'm passionate about. It's not that I am taking anything away from my writing. It's just that I am prioritizing jiu-jitsu and my health first. So my physical health and my mental health, my brain health, right? So if I don't have that, if I don't have my brain health, everything else goes to shit. Yesterday, I got almost nothing accomplished because I was in a bad place. Mentally, I was angry, frustrated, all that stuff. I cannot work like that. So if it means that I got to wake up at 5 in the morning to go train after training the night before, so be it. That's what I'm doing. Then I'll come home. Then I'll figure stuff out. Yeah, it's been a lot. Oh, fuck. Before I forget. All right. Couple things. I get excited about jiu-jitsu. I apologize. You guys are probably tired of me talking about it, but man, it's a big thing for me right now. Into the episode, instead of reading from Death Fest, just because I'm running late and everything else, let's go with a horror story from Twisted Reunion. That is my most rated book, which is kind of sad because it only has a little bit over 400. I think it's like 440. Am I ever going to break 1,000? Hopefully. But it's also one of my cool short story collections. There are 28 in there. I will play the first story from that. I've shared it on this podcast before, but maybe you haven't heard it. And if you have, just fucking skip it and go listen to something else. But I will play Each Dawn I Die. I thought that was a super cool one to start with. That is a title that I took from a Manowar song. Lots of my stuff is heavy metal derived because I fucking love metal. If you guys haven't figured that out by now. Yeah, but exciting week, super exciting week. A lot of cool shit. Oh, and Try Not to Die in the Pandemic, currently free on Amazon KU. Next week, we're going to have Try Not to Die Death Fest and maybe one other one for free. And then again, the following week. Oh, and also, I think I have two German titles free next week. Totentanz and Es hat die oder CTE, which is TBI or CTE in German. So those will also be free. Trying to build those up before the book Mesa, which is coming up again quick. So that is what's going on writing wise. Last week I talked about the possibility of getting promoted to brown belt. Like I don't know if it's going to happen. My wife and I have been talking a lot about it because she was hoping to get promoted to purple. I was hoping to get promoted to brown, but part of us also kind of didn't want to because we both weren't sure if we're ready. And, you know, like I have a lot of self-doubt. I often feel like I can't learn new stuff and I just have my old habits or whatever else. All these, you know, this is all self-doubt. And then the day of the promotion ceremony, my wife had gone to help. She printed up all the certificates and she told me, she's like, our coach Mike Wilson is only promoting blue belts. And I was like, okay, that's fair. I get it. He hadn't promoted anyone past the blue belt before. And so I was like, all right, that's cool. I'm going to go support everyone else. And I knew there was a badass seminar by Coach Casey, their coach, right afterwards. So I was excited about that. That seminar was awesome. Man, even if I just got one thing, well, a lot of great life advice, a couple things that really hit me hard and stuck with me, but also a couple cool ass moves that I just hadn't ever done. I love head arm chokes. I can go after them all the time. Sometimes I don't like doing them too much because they could be a little bit of a crank, but he showed how to do it with expending almost zero energy, and all week long I've been hitting it. So Coach Casey, Thank you very much for that. That was awesome. It was great to see him. So that was pretty cool. That was awesome to have him there. But the coolest thing was, so after all the blue belts get promoted, Mike had two purple belts to promote. One of them was Ashley Evans Smith, his girlfriend, a UFC fighter. I interviewed her a long time ago. So that was incredible to see. And then he promoted my wife. So Jen got her purple belt. I don't know if I've ever seen her that happy. It was just so cool to see. And after that, I got promoted. And that meant a lot to me. The things he was saying, just building me up. And just to know that I am his first brown belt. So that meant a lot. So people outside of the sport probably like, eh, fucking who cares? Or brown belt, big deal. Taekwondo, my kids got fucking black belts. It's like, no, we worked hard for this. My wife and I were talking about it. Like, we know it's kind of, it felt kind of ridiculous to be that happy, that excited about it, or that proud. And trying to downplay it. I was like, no, I am going to take pride in this because it has not been easy. The last 6 months have been difficult. Injuries, panic attacks, different shit, having to deal with kids, not working, you know, not riding, all that kind of stuff. Fucking ACL gone, MCL gone, or at least messed up, and neck issues or whatever else. So tons of reasons not to go train. Fucking 51 years old. Do I really need to go do jiu-jitsu? But for me, yeah, I do. And I'm going to continue to go. And I'm going to keep repping the school. And I'm going to wear that brown belt with pride because, yeah, I will honor it. Because if I didn't, if I was like, oh, you know, whatever, it's just this. I was like, no, then that's disrespectful to my coaches that fucking put in all this time to try to get me to this place. So thank you to 10th Planet Whittier. Fucking been a lifesaver for myself, for my wife. It's been tremendous to see my son developing, becoming more confident, more respectful, just everything you would expect out of jiu-jitsu. I talked about doing our jiu-jitsu journey. That is 100% still happening. I will not have the first episode done anytime soon because of all this stuff I have going on. But that was awesome. So I ended up training, I think it was a total of like 8 days in a row. One or two of those days I had double days. Again, not the hardest training sessions because lots of times I'm taking it kind of easy, but I'm still sweating. I'm still working. I'm still learning. And that's awesome. Another really cool thing that happened last week was that my friends from Germany were here. I talked a little bit about them. Marika and Misha from Germany. Marika has a Child of the Library podcast. That's where I first met her. She's the reason why I even went to the Frankfurter Book Mesa in the first place. So it'll be awesome to see them there. But really, really cool that they wanted to hang out with us. They spent Friday here almost the entire day. I think they came at 10 o'clock in the morning, didn't leave until 10 or 11 at night, got a lot of talking in, talking about books. They're working on a book. So that was cool to help them develop that. But the whole family just enjoyed it. My son has something else that he could have done that he normally would have wanted to go hang out with his friends, but he wanted to stay because our friends were here. So that was really cool. My daughter was in on the conversation. So they came the next day. And then on Sunday, right before they had to fly back to Germany, maybe had an hour of time, they again drove out of their way to come and take photos of us at Open Mat. And that was super awesome. We got all kinds of great photos. Really cool. I appreciate them. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to seeing them when I go back to Germany. So that was awesome. And then just a couple of days ago, I got my stuff from Brian Ochoa, the guy who created this. Got these stickers in our Try Not to Die moth. That thing is beautiful. I love it. Also, got the Death Fest shirts in. The one I'm wearing right now has Try Not to Die on the back, like a concert shirt. Got those in. Going to start sending those to my Death Fest confession authors and special fans, reaching out to them for all their sizes. And I got a fucking huge 10-foot by 6-foot banner for Germany. So that is going to be awesome. I think it's going to draw people in. Even though it's in English, they're going to be able to read it, and they are going to want to know what the hell Try Not to Die is. So, fuck yeah, that's awesome. Now, where the overwhelming feeling comes from is trying to do these Try Not to Die brand new covers and get them in time for the Book Mesa and all that. It has been difficult. I just got them all in today, the print copies. Now I have to, I've already formatted the new books. I'm going to put them up through Amazon, but I will not get them in time for the fair. So that means books 1, 2, 3, and 4 are not going to show up. I did not mail any of the old ones. I did not order the old ones in time. I can't do it now. there's a slight possibility, maybe if I order these today through Amazon and I send them to Germany to my hotel, maybe I could get them on time. But also realize, you know what, I don't need it. I also have a big poster with all the new covers and telling people if they want to get them, they order them online. I just won't have them at the fair. So I'll have the old copies of Wild West, Ghostland, and Deathfest. I love all the new covers. I think they're fucking awesome. I haven't seen the Ghostland one yet, but I should have that today. So yeah, so that was upsetting. But again, it's like, okay, I just need to figure it out. And accept, you know, I could only do so much. And the whole point of this thing was to meet the public, to sell translation rights. I'm going to do all of that. I can't guarantee I'm going to sell the translation rights, but I feel pretty confident I'm going to get a couple bites. I think I have a solid product. I think I have some incredible co-authors. I think it's just going to grow and grow and grow. So that is pretty cool. That's how I'm going in. I leave next Sunday, and then I will be there just for a week. The whole time is the only... Last time I got to do a little bit of traveling, I was able to go see my cousin Marco, incredible bass player and guitarist. And I got to meet him and his family, and they're not too far from where my great, 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 who knows how long ago grandfather lived. So that was cool to see his area. It was cool to go see Nico and his brother and go to the castle that we were writing about. This time, none of that's going to happen. Nico is coming, which is incredible. That's going to be so cool to have my co-author there. We'll be able to talk about our books, have someone help me out with the German, all that. So super grateful that he's going to be there, but I won't be doing any traveling. I will go to one or two jiu-jitsu gyms. I still need to write to them and set that up, but I want to go train when I can. And I was considering going to a concert Saturday night. There's still a small possibility. It's one of the German bands that I like a lot. I listen to them all the time, Hamatome, but it's like 2.5 hours away from the Book Mesa, which means if I get down at 7 o'clock, I have to haul ass. I'll miss part of the concert. Then I get back late, and then the next morning I could probably barely speak. So I'm probably not going to go. That would have been super cool. All right, so yeah, that's what I got going on. I don't think there's anything else to discuss. Oh, fuck yeah, there is. I got the Deathfest Confessions. So that's the other thing I've been trying to rush, is these covers for the Deathfest Confessions. There's 15 of these short stories. I have received 8 of them. I'm going to release 3 of them for the fair. So these are just going to be standalone ebooks, and then when I put out the whole anthology, we'll have all 15 of them together. So that's going to be super cool. These stories are awesome, but they're also pretty fucking extreme. Damon Manx, his story is brutal. I can absolutely love it. B is for brother. Then we have Caitlin Marceau versus a little bit more. Again, loved it. A little bit more extreme than his. And that one is called Eat Me. And then we have Simone Trohan from Germany. And hers is holy shit. I should have known. Like, that's what she writes. She writes extreme horror. I don't read a whole lot of extreme horror. I've read Duncan Ralston's. I really enjoyed that. But man, this was it's a powerful story. All three of them are powerful. But yeah, this one shocked me. So very excited to have those. Those are being translated right now. I think I get one of them back tomorrow. Bestätigt für Brüder. And then we have Eat Me, which will be Verschlingmisch, which is Devour Me. And then we have Simone's, which was Stirb Edish, which is Die Forever. Sorry for my pronunciation. It's terrible. Made a cool little video with Derek yesterday talking about her story. Well, actually, all three stories. And he's saying a little bit of her stuff. So if you want to see that on social media, I believe it is still there. I'm considering taking him to Germany with me. I think it might be kind of fun. I got to figure out the whole packing situation and the banner and books and all that kind of shit, stickers. But I will do what I can. If it means not taking a suit this time to make room for him, I might do it, because fuck wearing a suit. I can wear, I'll still look presentable. I'll wear a tie and nice shirt with sleeves even. But yeah, I think I'm going to leave the suit at home this time. Yeah, why? Like, I'm not trying to impress anybody. If you guys like my work, if a publisher likes my work, if an agent likes my work, they're not going to give a shit what I look like. So, but I will look professional those first couple of days. After that, I'm going like this. Fuck it. I'm rocking Deathfest and try not to die, because that's what this shit is all about right now. All right, guys, I'm going to get out of here. Got a lot of stuff to do. I'm going to leave you with a short story from Twisted Reunion. That is Each Dawn I Die. I hope you dig the story. If you've already heard it, like you said, I apologize. Sorry. Next week, I'll try to go back to reading Trying to Die at Deathfest. We'll see how that works. Maybe I can, I'll try to plan ahead and actually record Thursday morning. I will try not to have an angry, sad day that day. Maybe I'll even go and train with Coach Miko, who I haven't had a chance to train with yet. Another black belt at our gym. I have 4 black belts at a gym. That's incredible. So I should take advantage of it. And it'll put me in a better mood Thursday so I could do this podcast and the newsletter early. All right, guys, that's it for me. I hope you have an incredible week, and I will talk to you later. Peace.
Each Dawn, I Die. The girl he called Laura buried her face in the pillow. Her crying returned to full-blown sobs. Vic stroked her shoulder and tried to shush her, wished he could remember her real name. She eased up a little with his touch. "There you go. That's better," he said. "It's not that I don't like you, but I gotta sleep by myself." She jerked away from him. "It's nothing personal," she screamed into the pillow.
"I know."
Vic stopped pretending with his nice voice. "You need to get up." He grabbed the stained wipe-up towel and wrapped it around his waist. She peeled her face away from the pillow and looked at him, her face a black mess of smeared mascara. Sounding much younger than the 18 years she claimed, she asked,
"Where are you going now?"
Vic opened his bedroom door and called to George, who was passed out on the couch.
"Hey, I need you to help me out."
"No, no, I don't want anybody in here," the girl pleaded.
George had been Vic's boy for nearly a decade. They'd met in Principal Jenner's office after getting caught buying ecstasy. George rubbed his eyes and ran a hand over his shaved head.
"Come on, lady, you gotta go."
"Oh my God," she said to Vic. "You're such a jerk."
Vic turned his face to her. "I'm sorry, I have to get up early. George will take you home."
"I can't go home. I told my parents I'm staying at Amy's."
Vic rolled his eyes at the ridiculousness. He needed to start doing a better job of checking IDs. As he headed for the bathroom, he told George, "Handle this quietly, please." He could hear her yells with the door closed, even with the shower running. The sound of the radio, though, made her disappear. When he walked out of the bathroom, she was still gone. He slipped on his boxers and fired up his laptop, opened the website. 15,000 views. Not bad for a half-dead fish in the sack, he thought. Vic had been running his site, maybe legal, for 2 years. The numbers had been on the uptick for the past 9 months. All of Vic's girls were real. Real homely, real naive. Some were real ugly, but most importantly, they were real virgins. Virgins weren't easy to come by these days, but Vic made do by prowling the malls and local water park. Their first forays into porn were then broadcast to 53 countries. Vic got fan mail from all over, none stranger than one from a guy in Bulgaria asking if he could shoot a video with a girl riding a G.I. Joe action figure. 3 quick knocks at the door, and Vic jumped to his feet. He checked the eye hole. Too many of the girls came running back for their foam, panties, or just to see if he'd call them the next day. Most never wanted to see him again. He was shocked at how many did. George entered, his hand pressed to his ear, small trail of blood running down his neck.
"Stupid bitch,"
Vic asked. "What the hell happened to you?"
"She bit me, man. She fucking bit me."
"Bit you?"
"Yeah. I was telling her how good she looked, thought maybe I'd get some seconds, and then she fucking bit me."
George went to the bathroom to clean up, and Vic laughed, grabbed an energy drink from the fridge. He cracked it open and took a long swig. Not really caring, he asked, "She say anything?"
"She said maybe 5 words the whole ride. Right here, left there. Didn't seem too happy."
"Well, can't please them all." George came out of the bathroom a few minutes later, 3 bandages awkwardly taped to his ear. His fat frame filled the doorway as he flicked on the light.
"Holy shit, it looks like you killed someone."
Vic chuckled, took a swig, and sat down at his computer, as George snapped photos of the bloody bedspread. George yanked off the old sheets, pulled a new pair of silk linens from the closet, and slid them onto the mattress. He smoothed them down, arranged the pillows.
She any good?
Eh, all right. He refreshed the website and said, oh, shit. I guess no one cares. She got 34,347 views. Not bad for 2 hours. George shoved the old sheets in the trash bag, twirled it closed, tied the end in a knot.
She was super hot, though.
He nodded at the cabinet with the recording equipment.
She know?
I don't know. George joined Vic in the living room.
Any new prospects?
Yeah. This chick's dad's a pastor.
Crazy.
Every new girl guaranteed a few new members, but subscriptions were skyrocketing. Tonight, Laura had already brought in 74 at $20 a pop. George shook his head, helped himself to the fridge.
I don't know how the hell you do it.
Vic wanted to say that it was because he made them feel special, but even he didn't believe that anymore.
Got anything lined up for tomorrow?
George plopped down on the couch, smacked his lips with each bite of yogurt.
Need me to stick around, or can I,
He was interrupted by a pounding on the front door.
Did you not lock the front gate? Vic asked.
I did. I always do.
Vic shook his head, got up from the computer, but reconsidered answering the door.
See who it is.
He headed into the bedroom. I'm not here. Another bang. George took another bite of yogurt.
They're not here for me.
Vic was too tired for this. How much do I pay you? Do you want to get a real job? George muttered under his breath and headed to the door. He opened it and said,
He's not...
An old woman in a dark brown dress barged across the threshold, backed George to the wall without so much as a touch, her decrepit finger and long, brittle nails inches from his lips. He pointed towards the bedroom. Vic threw on his robe and barely beat the woman to the doorway, not wanting to get trapped in this room with her. The woman looked Middle Eastern, like her leathery brown skin had been blown dry by wind and sand. Her angry eyes were cold and red from tears. Vic motioned towards the door.
You need to get out of here.
The woman brought her hand to her mouth, spit in it, and flung the saliva toward Vic. She shouted something that he couldn't understand, but the hatred translated perfectly. Vic wiped the spit from his face, pushed the woman towards the front door. Get out of here before I call the cops, you psycho bitch. Vic looked at George, but George didn't move. The woman did, turning her back on Vic. She stopped next to George and spoke in broken English.
You part of this?
He shook his head and kicked the trash bag.
I just clean up.
Vic's face still felt wet, but his hand came away dry. Look, I'm calling the cops, he said, headed for the phone, so you better get the fuck out of here. The door slammed. The woman had already left, and George threw the deadbolt. Why did you let her in? Vic said. George's face was whiter than the time he thought he'd had testicular cancer.
Who was she?
Vic hurried to the sink and splashed water over his face.
How the hell would I know?
You've never seen her?
There was a large Lebanese community on the south side of town, but Vic rarely went down there. Something about her seemed familiar, though. Maybe from a restaurant. I got no idea. George pointed to the computer.
You probably screwed her granddaughter. That wasn't just some random nut job.
Chill out.
I bet you anything,
George said. Vic waved him off and George grabbed the trash bag and camera.
I'd be careful, Vic. She could come back.
Maybe I'll have to get someone over here that can actually do something about it,
Vic said as George left. Vic had hired George because he was big and didn't ask for much money. Maybe Vic needed to spend some serious cash for legitimate protection. The number of girls on the site had climbed to 63, and at least half a dozen of them probably had dads in the picture. Vic threw the deadbolt and walked over to the computer. He wasn't worried, but it'd be good just to make sure. Another fan had called him the Virgin Slayer. He liked that, thought about adding it to his masthead, then scrolled through the photos. He was 3 months deep when Becky's profile and bloody sheet popped up. She'd been his waitress. They'd gone out drinking.
He'd brought her home. Waitress. Shit. The old woman had been at the counter. Becky had introduced her as her grandmother. George had been right. How had she found him here? Had Becky actually told her grandmother about what had happened? It had been 3 months ago. Vic couldn't sleep. His bedroom was pitch dark. There was a loud noise outside. It sounded like something scraping his shuttered bedroom window. It's not the old lady, he told himself, ashamed to even think something so stupid. He was on the third floor. It was probably a bird on a window ledge. Still, the old bitch had been in his head all night long. It was almost 6 o'clock. The sun was about to come up, and he needed rest for a heavy day at the gym. Vic grabbed a pair of earplugs and a sleep mask from the nightstand. He had one earplug in when the scrape came again, deeper and louder. Stop being a pussy. Vic pulled back the shutters and saw the first rays of light washing away the last of the pre-dawn shadows. He didn't see it right away, not until the scraping continued, a tendril of black mist slowly swirling in the air on the other side of the window. Three beings took their forms, each floating. The one in the middle looked closest to human, a pale face wearing a black medieval doctor's mask. He wore a dark robe, his bony hand gripping a scalpel. On the other side of him were his henchmen, with heads of jackals and talons for hands. I'm fucking dreaming, Vic said aloud to snap himself out of the nightmare. The trio floated forward, seeped through the edges of the glass. Vic slammed the shutters, but the thick black mist poured through the cracks. They began to solidify, once again taking their previous forms. But the henchmen each grabbed an arm and dropped Vic onto the bed, pinning him down, their talons ripping through his flesh. The doctor produced a curved metal tube from his dusty robe, inserted it between Vic's lips. It clinked against Vic's teeth, tore into the back of his throat. Vic studied the doctor's pale, rotting face, searching the black sockets that should have held eyes. The beast's chuckle paralyzed Vic as the blood poured down his throat. The doctor whispered something unintelligible, produced a glass jar filled with spiders and scorpions scrambling over each other. He unscrewed the lid and held it to the tube. Vic's mind screamed as the creatures poured inside him. His body bucked against the henchmen who were holding him down. Soon, the container was empty. The death doctor tossed it aside. Vic never heard it hit the floor. He couldn't breathe. His windpipe clogged, and thousands of bristly feet finding their way up from every path, fire-filled stings blurring his thoughts. Vic had never wanted to die until this moment. He opened his eyes and found the death doctor's decaying face just inches from his own. His foul breath tinged with rotting meat seeped through the mask. He pulled the tube from Vic's throat, then slid a magnifying monocle from his robe, placed it where his right eyeball should have been. A small silver dot in the eye socket grew larger in the glass. The doctor pinched Vic's cheeks and peered down his swelling throat. Vic couldn't understand the doctor's words, but he recognized the language. It was the same nonsense as the old woman's, and he didn't have to speak the tongue to understand the evil dripping from those words. A distinctive metal click pulled Vic out of the panic. The doctor had just tapped the blade of the scalpel to the bedpost. Vic stayed conscious long enough to see his belly split open, the fading doctor and his henchmen smiling as the creatures skittered out from his intestines. Vic shot out of bed, his mind racing, trying to get his bearings. He was in his house, the house his parents had left him when they'd passed. He saw the tripod in the closet. It was all a dream, he thought, as he placed his feet on the floor. A sharp pain shot through his big toe. A shard of glass was sticking out of it. He plucked it out, looked at the ground. Dozens of spiders and scorpions were racing around the pile of broken glass. This was no dream. It was late afternoon. He opened his shirt, felt the stitches running down his chest. What the fuck, man? Maybe I'm still sleeping? But he wasn't. The blood trailing behind him as he pulled himself to the living room told him that. His computer was still up and running. Becky's profile was on the screen. But he turned it off, hadn't he? The old woman's laugh echoed in his head. Had she slipped him something? She'd gotten spit in his mouth. Maybe it had been laced. He ran back to the room, hoping the spiders and scorpions were gone. They were still crawling over his dirty underwear on the floor. The old bitch had done something. For the next few hours, he tried to figure out exactly what. He called George, but there was no answer, and his voicemail was full. Vic paced as Becky's eyes seemed to follow him around the room. Finally, he deleted her profile and videos. Still, he felt her judging from somewhere. He threw on his old jeans and a shirt and grabbed the gun under the sweaters in the closet. He got in his Porsche and drove to the alley across the street from where he dropped Becky off. It was dark except for the light in the girl's house. He didn't bother locking the car, the 357 tucked in his belt, the baggy shirt hiding it. He stepped in front of the white picket fence and stared at the snarling pit bull on the opposite side. The old woman's gravelly voice jolted Vic. She stood on the porch, staring at him through dark, cataract sunglasses.
"You came," she said, sounding pleased.
Vic realized he hadn't thought about what to say. He felt silly and exposed out here on the street. "It doesn't look like he likes me."
"Oh, he will. At least the taste of you."
The old woman loved seeing him squirm. He couldn't show his true emotions. He had to be smart, diplomatic. If that didn't work, there was always the gun. "I need to see your granddaughter."
"I have no granddaughter."
"The young girl that works with you. She introduced us. That's why you came over."
"That's not why I came over."
"I want to apologize." It actually felt good to say that. But the look of disgust on the old woman's face made Vic want to shrivel up and disappear.
"You don't even know her real name, but suddenly you feel the need to apologize. Why?"
The girl's name came back to him. "Gabby. Her name's Gabby."
"Gabrielle."
"I already took her off the website. I destroyed the recording."
"How thoughtful."
The old woman spat on the ground. "I can pay you. She deserves that. $5,000?
"That's the filthy money you make off of all those poor girls. Using them like they were trash."
"I didn't use them. I gave them..."
"You lied to them."
"Look, I'm sorry if you think I... Can I please talk to her?" The old woman shook her head.
"She didn't come down for breakfast one morning. I went to her room, saw the computer was on. There was a movie playing on the screen. I watched 10 seconds of the filth and turned it off. I heard the water running. Gabrielle was in the bathroom. The bathwater was so red, I couldn't see her legs. She died as the sun came through the window."
Vic placed his hand on the fence. He felt sick. The pit bull growled and leapt for his hand, snagging his knuckle. Vic jumped back. "I'm so sorry."
"And you'll remain sorry for the rest of your life."
There was no reasoning with her. The pit bull rammed itself against the fence. The beast was going to break through. Vic whipped out the gun as a black mist surrounded the woman. It flew at Vic, surrounding the gun until it pointed back at his own face. He felt his finger tensing. There was nothing he could do. The old lady said,
"There will be no end."
The gun fired. Vic lifted his head from the piss-stained pillow in the abandoned house he'd been squatting in. It had been a solid 6 hours since his last death, his 76th in a row. The taste of hydrochloric acid sat on his tongue as Vic slipped out of bed and headed straight for the recording equipment piled on the moving box. Vic played the footage from last night and turned on the small monitor. On the screen, Vic moved around the dark room, then fell asleep on the bed. He fast-forwarded a few minutes and slowed it to where he rose to check the oncoming dawn. When his recorded self turned to the door, no one else could be seen on the video, but his body was miraculously lifted into the air and slammed onto the bed. There was no need to relive the experience. Vic turned everything off and headed into the bathroom. He grabbed a bottle of Listerine, filled his mouth, and gargled. He'd made the mistake of glancing at the mirror. He was only 24, but the dark bags under his eyes were getting bigger and blacker every day.
His head full of dark brown hair had gone bone white and started falling out. He'd considered dyeing it and getting Rogaine, but what's the point? A few more dawns like this, and it'd all be gone. Maybe that was part of the curse, to end up looking like that damn woman. All he needed now were the liver spots. Vic spat the mouthwash out and grabbed his toothbrush. If the Listerine couldn't kill the taste of the acid, he doubted the toothpaste would help. But he gave it a shot. The sight of his emaciated arm moving back and forth made him break down and weep. He was falling apart. He'd lost over 50 pounds since the curse. With his withered frame, he could never again seduce a female. But that was the last thing he wanted now. He just wanted this to end. How nice it would be to fall back to sleep like a normal person and wake with the sun pouring through the window. He used to sleep in every morning. Now he was lucky to get a couple of hours of fitful rest each night. Vic threw on his jeans, put on the dark blue tank top that used to showcase his biceps, but now only exposed his atrophied arms. Death did not exist. Not for him. Whether it was the doctor and his henchmen, or by his own hand, the permanence of death couldn't happen. He tried everything. Slitting his wrists, jumping off skyscrapers, bridges. He'd driven his car off a cliff and eaten more bullets than he could remember. Sleeping pills didn't work either, always wearing off at first light. Vic had fled west in an attempt to escape the dawn, but the bastards had followed and flooded his throat with a steady flow of viscous oil. They lit it on fire in Illinois. They forced razor blades through his trachea in Albuquerque. Then the doctor took a chainsaw to his chest in Wyoming. There were the Dobermans in Cheyenne. Being ripped apart by dogs had been the worst. He'd lost everything within the first month. His house, his bank account, every one of his so-called friends after he shut down the website. He traveled around the country seeking out the girls he betrayed. Some forgave him. Most did not. It didn't matter where he was. Each dawn, he died. Usually he was alone. But a few times there were spectators. He avoided crowded places because the doctor never left witnesses. Good Samaritans, thinking he was having a grand mal, were torched and gutted. So, Vic stayed in the darkness. He ate whatever scraps he found in dumpsters, drank his bellyful of cheap wine, hoping to numb the pain. But the doctor would leech his blood until he was sober enough to feel the blade. Vic prayed for natural causes to eventually strip him of his strength. Prayed the doctor would one day grow tired and find someone new. But each morning he'd rise and see that wretched sun. This was his life. And it would never end.